From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in July when the Justice Department intervened in a private employment case. Now, that sounds sort of boring or dry off the top, but this is a story about LGBTQ rights and protections and whether those rights will be stripped away under the Trump administration. Because this particular case centered on the question of whether civil rights law bars job discrimination based on sexual orientation. The Justice Department urged the Federal Appeals Court to rule that civil rights laws do not cover sexual orientation. And this action came right when President Trump was tweeting that he would seek to ban transgender Americans from serving in the military. Here's how the Washington Post reported on what the Trump Justice Department was doing. Quote, the amicus brief filed with the full U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in New York also runs contrary to the position of the Obama administration's Justice Department, as well as the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC. Both adopted the view that the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which bans employment discrimination on the basis of sex, also applies to sexual orientation. The law itself does not say that. The question has implications well beyond employment law, particularly in education. Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972, a powerful weapon against discrimination, is generally interpreted in sync with rulings on the employment discrimination law. That's how the Obama administration justified its efforts to enforce bathroom and locker room equity for transgender students. End quote. It's a timely discussion for us because this hour we're looking at the history of LGBTQ issues in Rochester, especially in light of the fact that the Gay Alliance has changed its name. It's now known as the Out Alliance, and they've got a lot of work to do. Later this hour, we will discuss local history, including a discussion on Rochester City Council, which is about to be without any LGBTQ members for the first time in 32 years. You guys want to talk? While the host loses it. Hi, Bob and Rowan.
Hi.
Rowan, you've been here before. You want to take over?
Sure. Yeah, so while Evan is having a little bit of a coughing fit there, the Gay Alliance, as of today, as it is National Coming Out Day, seemed timely and appropriate for us to officially change our name to the Out Alliance. So we have been in talks for well over a year and a half, almost 2 years, to really think about what sort of a name change needed to happen. We've known for more than 2 years that the name Gay Alliance didn't accurately represent all of the communities and all of the identities that we were providing services for, providing advocacy for. And so to find a way to continue to honor the legacy that the Gay Alliance has and has had for decades, since its founding in 1973, wanting to keep that essence of alliance, that it is a, you know, an alliance of groups, an alliance of communities, an alliance of identities. So the Out has become sort of an aspirational aspect of what we hope to do. We know that being out and coming out is not always something that everyone is capable of doing, is able to do, is safe to do, and that it changes based on the intersection of identity. And so it's kind of something that we hope to create is a world where people can be authentic and be out.
Rowan, thank you for jumping in there for me. Thank you. And by the way, Rowan is Education and Communications Coordinator with the Out Alliance. And Bob Crystal's here. Bob is the first vice president of the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley, now known as the Out Alliance, back in 1973. How do you feel about the name change, Bob?
It's like having a child change its name. We worked very hard on coming up with the Gay Alliance. We had examples of from the gay pride marches and the riots, Stonewall riots, of people urging different names for different reasons. The Gay Liberation Front was definitely in line with the student revolution that was happening, and we didn't want to keep tied to that. Although we left the Gay Liberation Front on the U of R campus, we wanted to broaden out. And at the time, gay was an inclusive word, and it has grown to become an exclusive word. And that's one of the reasons why I'm glad to see the change. But it still hurts me a little bit because I was one of the ones that came up with it. There was a small committee that argued and talked and drank beer about it for quite a while.
It's interesting, though, you say that it's gone from inclusive to more exclusive as a word. So back in 1973, gay was more of an umbrella term that meant something more broadly?
Well, we referred to gay men and gay women. I don't refer to myself as a gay. people do that now, and people are referred to as the gays. That just didn't compute back in 1973. It was one of those things where gay was that whole spectrum. The LGBTQ, we were just the Gay Alliance because that's what gay was.
The T part is, I want to ask you if you think that that is deservedly more emphasized today and maybe was less emphasized 44 years ago.
No. I think that it was emphasized back in 73. One of the first members of the Gay Liberation Front was a transsexual. As a matter of fact, somewhere in the archives, Evelyn will have to look for it, is the movie that we made for his film thesis, for his senior thesis. Her senior thesis, sorry. I'm an old man, I forget. But no, one of the original members was trans. And we always have had that component. In addition, if you remember the Stonewall, that was a trans bar. It was a whole bunch of Nellie Queens who did the first riot. And Patty Evans was one of the few cis people in that bar at the time. You know,
I've got to relate to this too, and I apologize because the last time the executive director of the Out Alliance, Scott Fearing, was here, he was talking about Will and Grace. So the second episode this season, I've got to ask you, Bob, the second episode this season, which just aired this past Thursday night, Will, who's now around 50, is dating a 23-year-old guy, or has a date with a 23-year-old guy, and at first he's sort of boasting to Jack that, you know, I'm still cool enough to date young people. But he gets annoyed on the first date because the 23-year-old doesn't, he calls it Stonehenge, he doesn't know Stonewall, and he's like, I don't really even know what that is. And Will eventually says, I can't do this, like, you have no appreciation for all the struggle that we went through so you could have your, you know, your blissful ignorance. What a privilege for you as a young gay man not to have to know what Stonewall was and not to have to go through the same struggle, and that we went through that struggle so you could have that. And I wonder how you feel about that. I mean, so I know it's a fictional show, but I thought that if that echoes.
It's not a fictional emotion. at the risk of bringing in something that doesn't need to come in, I have a friend whose mother is very upset because he doesn't know what plantation his family came from. And it's the same concept. You don't know what it was like. I was fired merely because I was gay. I was shot at merely because I was walking down the street with a bunch of my friends. We happened to have a banner and a megaphone, but it was guns. We were kicked out of, or kept out of, the mayor's office here in Rochester because we were gay, and the mayor was afraid to be seen with us. So yes, Will's anger and disappointment was very much part of what I feel now. On the other hand, I'm sitting there going, "Wow." we were talking before we came down. We came up to the studio. Most of us didn't think we were going to succeed. Most of us thought we were the little boy in the dike with his thumb in the dike. We thought that it was a losing battle, but we're going to fight it anyway. And look at this. Look where we are now. I never imagined it. So I'm of two thoughts, two minds in that.
Well, and to that point about, you know, not thinking you're going to succeed and look at all the progress, that's why I opened the hour with this conversation that's been in the news about what Title IX protections do and don't mean and what the Trump Justice Department is doing. I'm going to get to that in a second, but I know one of our callers wants to talk a little bit more about the name change, which we will continue to talk about as we go throughout the hour. This is Don in East Rochester. Go ahead, Don.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I don't understand the name change. If you wanted to be more inclusive of the community, why didn't you change it to the LGBTQ Alliance? 45 years ago, when I was coming out of the closet and started going to the what was then called the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley, if I would have looked in the phone book, which is what we did in those days, and I would have seen nothing about a gay alliance but an out alliance, I wouldn't have had no idea what I'm looking for. I would have thought, well, this must be an outdoor club or something. I'm just wondering, are you trying, it seems like you're trying to take the LGBTQ of it and replace it with something a little more innocuous, I don't understand the change. Why I could understand updating it to the LGBTQ Alliance, because we are the LGBTQ community. But to take all that out of the name and call it the Out Alliance, it just mystifies me. I don't understand what's going on.
Okay, Don, stay on the line. It's a fair question. You want to start, Rowan?
Sure. So, great question, Don. I really appreciate you bringing that up. I would imagine that you are not alone in that concern. We've heard similar things. In the last few months, we officially announced this name back in June. We had a little kind of voting on our new logo at the Pride Festival this summer, and we completely agree. It was something that we thought about was, well, the easy fix would be to call it the LGBTQ Alliance, and then we realized that there's a lot of other letters beyond LGBTQ, and they keep growing. Our community language has evolved at such a rapid pace, especially within the last 10, 15 years even, that it would be something we would have to continue to change and update potentially every few years. And that undertaking for a small nonprofit, though we are large in scope in terms of our reach and our influence, we are still a very small organization in terms of staff and numbers, was just something we could not undertake financially, or even just to know that we would continue to change our name and continue to throw folks off about where they could find us and how they could find us. So we have been making sure to take every precaution possible in terms of how folks can continue to find us, that we will make sure there is a trail. We are maintaining the term Gay Alliance as a legal name. We are using Out Alliance as a DBA. That way the actual legacy of the organization doesn't go away and will still be found through words like gay, through acronyms like LGBTQ. The second you plug that into Google, we will still show up. We will be sure to have that language because that is our community, and we don't want to have that go away. So I really do appreciate that concern.
Okay, and Bob, go ahead.
I would also like to point out, Don, that when you were coming out, that was the most important thing in your life. And to me, the word out, I come out all the time. I'm always being called on to come out. So to me, the new name calls me in that way, that it reverberates with what I pretty much daily practice.
Don, you want to follow up?
I don't understand how LGBTQ doesn't cover the whole, all the bases. I mean, who's not included in that? LGBTQ, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, and you can add on queer. That covers everybody. I mean, the name, the Gay Alliance, didn't cover everybody, and it was kind of a generic term for all of that. So just update it to LGBTQ, and I don't think you're going to have to change it every few years because I don't know what else you could more include. I stopped going to the Gay Alliance back in the 80s because I felt that it was becoming less and less militant than what I had known before. If back then you had changed it to the Out Alliance, I would have definitely have dropped it. I mean, I'm really questioning my ability to continue going to the LGBTQ Alliance or the Out Alliance anymore because it just seems like it's bowing down to what I call an assimilationist attitude in our society. For the most part, we stopped calling it Gay Pride. Now we just call it Pride. And that's going on in many cities around the United States. Pride. Well, who doesn't have pride? Everybody has pride. It's gay pride or LGBTQ pride. It's like saying we're not going to call Black History Month anymore. We're just going to call it History Month. Well, that wouldn't make any sense. Nobody would understand that.
All right, Don, so I hear the point. And let me let our guests respond to some of that as well. But this does not perfectly line up with Black history. It just doesn't. Mm-hmm. Our understanding and embrace of sort of the full spectrum here has been changing over time. And, you know, Rowan, you want to address Don's point there about how he says, well, wouldn't LGBTQ cover everybody? Who could be missing there? And why wouldn't that be a permanent name?
Well, when we think about the acronym LGBTQ, even if we think of it as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer, there are still lots of folks who don't use any of those five terms to identify their orientation, their gender, their expression, who are still under our very vast and diverse umbrella. Words can be incredibly different based on other pieces of our identity, where we're from geographically, other cultures we belong to, our ethnicity, our place of national origin, even just slang terms.
Or age, even.
You know, there are, even that Q at the end of LGBTQ is still contentious in our community because the term queer has fairly recently been reclaimed by many, and so lots of folks don't even feel comfortable with that being part of the acronym. So I think that in order to find the perfect acronym, it might not ever happen. And so in order to be as forward-thinking as we can, I think that acronym wouldn't quite encapsulate all of our communities.
And now, as an old man who studied English in college, it does not fall trippingly off the tongue. LGBTQ, Q-I, and...
A.
A.
And S, P.
Yeah.
On and on, yeah. There's
and
more.
It goes on and on. And we're looking for something that is and will be for a while as inclusive as gay used to be. And we would not have needed to change the acronym if we had not watched the word gay transform into more or less male, and so that there's gay and lesbian. But even back in 73, we were talking about including lesbian and gay. And so, but all of this is a search for inclusivity. And if you can, Don, they will not resist you if you come up with a word that's more inclusive than out. We welcome continued conversation on it.
And so, Don, I can also tell you, just having known the people in this organization and the work that they do, they have not watered down the mission. They have not, you know, sort of softened their approach. And in fact, we've got a lot more to talk about this hour with that. But Rowan, you know, I see the opposite. I see an organization that is working hard to push into schools, to push into communities, and to occasionally challenge communities that might have been a little more historically resistant to updating and understanding. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that basically beyond name, we have expanded programming. We have worked harder to be in the communities that we need to be in, to have the conversations. And this is kind of a renewed space for us to forge new alliances, to mend and build new bridges with organizations that are doing similar work or work that we can't handle in scope. But we are getting into our public K-12 districts, both urban, suburban, and rural. We're getting into professional organizations and unions. We're getting into communities of faith. We're getting into colleges across the state, across the country even. We're looking at, getting into corporate America as well, to just try and have the conversations that are necessary to create the sorts of spaces that many of us didn't have growing up. Even myself, as someone who is only 25 in the scope of the movement as such a young person, but just seeing the difference from 5 years ago to now, that's some of the work that we've done and will continue to do and have expanded.
Rowan, go ahead, Bob. I'll jump in.
I want to speak as a former revolutionary. I was anarchist. I belonged to several anti-war movements that required that you be anti-government in order to join them. My sister jokes that my FBI file is only 2 feet thick, but so I wasn't a very good revolutionary. But the point being that sense of revolutionary is still happening, but it's not as blatant and it's not as anarchist as it used to be. You open the program with something that is going to require a lot of fervor to overcome. We still have to, we achieved marriage and a whole bunch of people jumped ship because they thought that we had accomplished what we had set out to do. Why bother? No, we will always have to bring other people into the fold of understanding. One of the greatest organizations in the whole gamut is PFLAG, the parents and families of lesbians and gays. The whole concept of coming out to your parents and then inviting them to join was a revolution when it happened.
I love hearing the beautiful stories that come from, you know, parents who embrace it and show that love, and I'm sure there are many stories. Mm-hmm. Rowan, what do you want to add here?
I think it's also important for us to just recognize that that there are so many different ways that folks have mobilized themselves still to this day. I mean, there are LGBT people in every realm of political ideology, that there are LGBT anarchists still and continue to be. I mean, lots of queer and trans folks are the ones who are still pushing, anarchist, anti-fascist movements in our area as well, and to know that there's never going to be one group that speaks for the entire community, because it's so vast and so diverse. That folks take the approach that feels like the best way for them, and that changes mm-hmm. throughout organizations' histories as well.
That was back in '73. That was our goal, was mm-hmm. to provide an umbrella, a home for any smaller organization that didn't want to go through the whole process of getting approval from Albany to be a charitable mm-hmm. to be a charitable organization. There is a place for a revolutionary group that want to do incisions and surgical demonstrations. There's also a place, and Out Alliance is providing a home for both of them, for somebody or some group that wants to go in and give sermons in churches. I was totally anti-religion at the point of my coming out for that very reason. I needed to fight against something, and that was where I found my finest enemies.
And how do you feel about religion now?
I'm working in the church. That's one of the things that I learned over the course, and why I say I'm a former anarchist, is that you can be, in many cases, you can be much more effective sitting in the pew than standing outside in front of the church.
What a beautiful story. And real briefly, before we bring in another voice to the conversation, can you tell me a little bit about being fired just for being gay, Bob?
I was in the weekend paper, the Roto Gravure. There was a movie that had just come out that was talking about what it means to be a man. It was a John Wayne movie or something like that. And someone at the, I think it was the DNC, decided they were going to do a four-page spread in the Sunday paper about what it means to be a man. So they interviewed a policeman, and they interviewed a fireman, and they interviewed a soldier. And then they interviewed me, and there I was in front of my employer's building saying that you don't need to be straight to be a man. And my employer saw my picture and then recognized his logo and said, this has got to stop. And that was the end of me. I was gone.
Did you try to respond with any sort of legal action?
There was no legal action to take.
Yeah, but did you at least search for any sort of a means for it, or did you just?
There was nothing. I was friends with Bob Osborne at the time. He had already done all that research, and that's why he was active. Was that there was no law? There's no protection at all, and so when he said no, there is no protection. What's the next? My question to him was, what's the next step? And he said, we got to get the laws in place, and that's how I became really nitty-gritty active in the day-to-day operation of politics, which is not fun.
And so that was so that firing was 1971, 72? It was 1973, same year as being vice president of the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley.
That's why I was interviewed.
Okay, 1973, and in our second half hour, we'll talk a little bit more about what the Trump Justice Department is doing. But do you see echoes and concerns for you now, Bob, with that? The Trump Justice Department doesn't necessarily view orientation, sexual orientation, as protected in certain sections of the law.
And if they succeed, then my next answer is going to be, we're going to have to amend the law. So we're going to have to get right back into the trenches and change the law. It's as simple as that. If they won't expand then we need to force them to expand. But just remember that during his whole tenure, Ronald Reagan never said the word gay or AIDS. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you can unblow that trumpet. Pun intended.
Well, let me now go ahead and bring in another voice into the conversation. It's a conversation this hour about not just the name change. The Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley is now the Out Alliance. Online where, Rowan, by the way?
Outalliance.org.
Outalliance.org. And we're talking about why that name change, but also the history of the fight for civil rights. And a look at some current issues on the federal level. Now, here at the state, here at the city level, here in Rochester, Rochester is likely, based on history, based on who's on the ballot now and what parties running for city council, Rochester is likely in 2018 to be, for the first time since 1985, without any member of the LGBTQ community on city council.
Without any out member.
That's an important distinction. But Matt Haig is on the line with us, and he is a member of city council who is leaving city council by choice, did not run for re-election. And Matt, thanks for taking the time to join us. How are you?
I'm doing well, Evan. How are you?
Very good. And I know it's a very busy week for you. We appreciate the time. And I also want to be fair to both Matt. Matt Judah was a candidate who ran for city council as a Democrat, did not win. He's technically on the ballot, but he told me this morning that he's not actively campaigning. He realizes history shows us that the Democrats on the ballot are likely to be the winners. And I think it's unfair to say, well, Matt Judah would have been the gay councilman, or Matt Haig is the gay councilman. They're not. They're members of city council. And Matt Haig's work has spanned a wide range of issues. He's been on this program many times talking about a wide range of issues. So, Matt, I guess I want to say, Mr. City Councilman, I don't want to pigeonhole you, but I also do want to ask you how you feel about looking at council, now that you're departing it, likely not to have any out members of the LGBTQ community since 1985.
Yeah, Evan, you know, I have to, you know, really answer that both in an intellectual way and in an emotional way. In an emotional way, it certainly saddens me that, at least for now, I will be the last openly gay elected official on the council. I hope I'm not the last. I don't think I will. I think the community will come back. But it does sadden me that one of the longest continually held seats by somebody from the LGBT community in the entire country will no longer have that representation. In an intellectual way, I guess in a more critical look, I think it's disappointing in the sense that I believe it is far too early to declare victory in any way, that, you know, we have marriage equality, so all is well in the LGBT community. The diversity of our community, the diversity of need for people in our community are so broad and deep in many ways that I think it is an important voice that will be lost to council. We have many great allies on the council. That's important. But there is no one on the council, you know, as it will likely shape up as of January 1st, who actually has walked through and walked in the shoes of being an openly gay person.
So, Matt, before I let you go, because I know your time is short here, and we're going to shift and talk about federal issues and other challenges, issues that the Out Alliance is working on very actively. But for you, on that city level, what are some of the issues that council can address or has addressed or might eventually address that having a member of the LGBTQ community on the council would at least help to have that voice in the room to say, let me tell you how this impacts me or has impacted me or has impacted people from this community directly. What are the kinds of city issues that might be in play here?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are two issues. One, I think it's important that to have that voice. I think the city government needs to reexamine whether or not we have the ability to ban conversion therapy within city limits. There's some thought that can only be done at the state level. But I think that needs to be reexamined because it is a very dangerous practice that really puts people in the line for real harm. And I think that's something that's important to be addressed in the coming months. The other is you know, frankly, there will not be a person who is openly gay in city government. When we actually work with the Human Rights Campaign each and every year, it's one of their criteria they have going into their evaluation of a city, because I think they view it as whether a city is progressive, whether it's supportive. And so it's something that, unfortunately, we won't be able to claim, at least within city government, though we do at the, in the local state assembly with Assemblymember Bronson. But, you know, the conversion therapy thing is really something very important for us to look at. We're not getting traction at the state level to ban that. Mostly it seems a hold up in the state Senate. So I think we need to do what we can here locally to protect people who are put in very real danger by some of the practices that people, you know, look to have in this conversion therapy mindset.
Yeah, I think, Matt, I think some listeners will hear that and say, really, the state can't get on board with a ban? Something, this is not a new practice now. I mean, this is something that is known and understood for some of the horrors it has caused. Interesting. So, last question.
It is, and Evan, I think that it goes to the larger point. I know some people will say, well, maybe it's a sign of progress that we don't feel we need somebody from the LGBT community. I think that view is very narrow thinking and extraordinarily short-sighted. You know, I think diversity in all of its forms is some of the best ways we can represent our different communities and constituencies, and more importantly, bring those different communities and constituencies together to solve problems that face all of our communities. And it's also important to say that you have a continued voice, because things like that, which aren't moving at the state level, certainly aren't moving at the federal level. We need to have voices raise those issues up in very real terms to try to address them here.
All right, Matt, last quick question then. You know, I know you're departing council on your own choice for a number of personal reasons, but would you get back into politics at any level? Have you thought about that?
You know, I'm a big believer in never say never. You know, so, you know, if the time is right and the role is right, it is, and it's a way that I feel that I could add value to the conversation, and if I feel like I could contribute to the community, you know, I would certainly look to, you know, to that opportunity if and when it should arise. But, you know, for now, I'm going to enjoy a little bit more time at home and a few less busy evenings.
Well, I understand that. I will say, Matt, you've always responded so quickly to this program, to our questions and needs on a wide range of issues. You're one of the most well-informed public servants I've had the pleasure of talking to, even when it's not always a comfortable discussion for you. I mean, part of our job is to challenge people in government. I appreciate that. Thank you for the time. And your name comes up when I talk to people sort of privately in the inner circle about future mayors. So I don't know. We'll see.
But well, Evan, I appreciate it. And I have a deep appreciation for the role that the media has to play in good government and in our democracy. And so I appreciate the work that you and others do, whether they're easy questions or not. I think it's a role that we must embrace and value. So thank you for what you've done and for allowing me to join your program today and other times over the years.
We'll do it again soon. We'll see you soon, Matt.
And thanks for your service.
And Bob says thanks for your service as well, Matt. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
City Councilman
Bye-bye.
Matt Haig joining us. And as Matt mentioned, very likely now, for the first time since 1985, Rochester City Council will not have an out member of the LGBTQ community. Rochester, one of the longest, if not the longest running city in the country with that distinction. So that is certainly change that's coming. Let's get our only break of the hour. And when we come back, let's go back to where this conversation started. What is happening on the Justice Department level? And what does that mean for some of these issues that are currently being discussed at various levels? We'll talk about that with our guests in studio, Rowan Collins, Education and Communications Coordinator for the Out Alliance, and Bob Crystal, the first vice president of the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley, which changed its name. It's now the Out Alliance. And that was back, Bob became the first vice president of the Gay Alliance back in 1973. So we're talking history and the future next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, a new report shows that accounts of domestic violence in Monroe County are down for the sixth year in a row, but the rates remain higher than the New York average. Intimate partner violence impacts both victims and the community, and a new organization is hoping to raise awareness and provide services to help victims. We'll talk about the HEAL Collaborative, and we'll hear from a survivor about her journey. That's Thursday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So let me go back and tell you what's going on, as reported by a number of news outlets, including the Washington Post, about what is happening with the Trump Justice Department. You go back to July, and this was around the time that the president was sending out a lot of tweets about, he was going to order the military not to allow transgender Americans to serve in the military. And right around that time, as well as the Washington Post reports, the Trump Justice Department had filed a brief in the full U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, full U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in New York, regarding Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, 1964, Title IX. They don't think that sexual orientation is grounds essentially for job discrimination. Essentially, they think that that should be outside of that umbrella. That is not what the Obama administration had determined. That is not what the EEOC says, but that is what the Trump Justice Department says. And I don't know exactly where it stands or what happens next, but Rowan, why don't you tell me how you view this issue and kind of the landscape of what might be coming here?
Sure. So this, it brings up a lot of complicated legal issues, some of which I don't have the experience or knowledge to truly speak on, but from my own understandings and networks and talks and readings, they posed a lot of the copy and conversation that came out within the last week as though it was law, even though it's simply kind of a take on a policy. The actual law has not changed. The language from the Civil Rights Act in 1964 in Title VII, which kind of incorporates employment discrimination, the actual language there has not changed since it was written in 1964. What's happened has been interpretations and building of case law and understanding of this is what we as the court systems, as the Justice Department see to be in the best interest of the American people and how we interpret this. The scary thing has been the Justice Department weighing in on private employment disputes where they are not named as either the defendant or the plaintiff. Usually the Department of Justice only gets involved when they are looking at a federal or even sometimes a state level public dispute. This, the case that they waited on at the end of July, kind of on the same day as Trump's tweets around transgender military service, is a private employment dispute, and they aren't named in the case whatsoever. So them actually saying that they are essentially going to take their views into private employment case law sets a dangerous precedence, because it does say that they almost feel like they have the entitlement to kind of bring this interpretation across the board, even when it comes to private employment. There are lots of different interpretations there.
So I want to go back to something that Bob said. I think this is important here. You know, as Rowan is pointing out here, the Trump administration is essentially saying we don't have to change the law. We simply interpret the law differently, that we don't agree with the Obama administration, and that these protections for LGBTQ Americans don't necessarily exist under the Civil Rights Act of 1964 or even Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972, which has been a weapon against discrimination. The Trump administration saying, nope, we don't think so. And, you know, so the Out Alliance sees them weighing in on a private job dispute as a pretty heavy-handed and direct way to say, we feel so strongly that we're going to wade into these waters where we're not even really named or invited to kind of make it clear what we think here. So one of Bob's points was, if they sort of win on those grounds, in other words, if their interpretation of this law can hold up in court, then you think it's time for a movement to change the law, yes?
Indeed. There was an argument that Title VII allowed marriage, and that was a large part of the debate. If we had not gotten a decision from the Supreme Court, we would still be working on changing the law. We changed the law in New York State. I can remember every 29th or so of April for 12 years, I went to Albany and knocked on doors that were not opened to me as a representative of the gay community, out community. But I persisted, and we all persisted until the law was changed. I wish there had been somebody there to record all the joy when that law was changed. It was one of the best parties I've ever been to, and that was pretty much held in Albany, in the Egg. And it was a wonderful feeling that we had been endorsed and approved by all these New Yorkers, and I was looking forward to getting a federal law changed or passed to include sexual orientation or sexual identity, or however we wanted to phrase it, added to the Section 7.
And if you're wondering why this has to be codified specifically, well, there's a couple of things here. Obviously, it would need to be codified specifically if each successive presidential administration can take its own view of what
That's
it means
correct.
And doesn't mean, because it's not direct enough. The language in the law is not direct enough for Jeff Sessions and their team there to say, okay, well, that's not something that we can touch. They view this as open to interpretation and that they disagree with the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. There's that point. And then if you say, well, but isn't the law sort of, even if it's not specifically codified, shouldn't it be obvious? Well, was it obvious when this country was founded, all men are created equal? Our founders might have written some good documents, but were all men treated equally? Were African Americans? Were women?
Right. You know, there we go.
And throughout history, we've had to go back and recodify and re-specify what equality means, because we don't necessarily practice it very well at times. So maybe Bob's right. Maybe that movement happens. Now let's speak a little bit more broadly about the movement, because both Bob and Roan have made the point that once marriage equality was achieved, some in the gay movement, the LGBTQ movement, kind of felt like we can hang it up now. Yeah, Roan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there were organizations who ended up kind of shuttering their doors not too long after marriage equality was achieved in New York State in late June of 2011. Bye-bye was at that same party. We must have crossed paths. I interned in Albany during that, my freshman year of college. But there was so much more to be done, and there's always been so much more to be done. I mean, for the longest time, marriage wasn't even on the table for most of the folks in the community. That wasn't the main concern. The fact that it was achieved was an amazing, amazing success, and something that I think many never thought they would see in their lifetime. But to know that, you know, you can still legally be fired in almost half the states in this country for being gay, lesbian, bisexual, and in close to three quarters of the states in this country, you can still be fired for being transgender. Case law kind of aside, even though there is a mountain of court decisions that have said, you know, you are protected under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, you are protected under Title IX, there's still all of this contention around, well, there's no law. So we're going to interpret it the way that we want to. And so to recognize that we still have rampant homelessness within the LGBT community, especially in LGBTQ youth, we see, you know, lots of folks who are dealing with substance use and substance abuse, because we still have a very unwelcoming society at large that tells people that who they are is unlovable, is unworthy. And so folks are kicked out of their homes, are made to feel ostracized socially, whether that be at school, through other communities that they are part of. You know, we still see lots of folks being kind of funneled into the prison pipeline as well. When we look at intersecting aspects of identity, that there are so many other things out there beyond marriage, you know, adoption rights. When we, you know, just bringing back to what Council Member Haig was bringing up with conversion therapy, that's still an issue in this state. So I think there's so much more to be done that we can't assume that, well, you know, things were really great until last year or something. Like, there was always more to be done, and there's more to be done, I think, than maybe ever at this point.
I think one of the things that has happened in the last year is that we've been more divided and less, and have fewer conversations. Things escalate when we talk politics so much more in the last year than they have in prior years. We're back to the point where sometimes we need that scalpel to just cut back and expose the discrimination and the hate and the intolerance. I personally can't understand why anyone would do conversion therapy. I have very little to talk to those parents there's very little in common that we have, and it's getting less instead of more. So pass the law, make sure that it is against the law to do conversion therapy, or against the law to fire somebody, or against the law to refuse to sell them a wedding cake. And let's move on to changing society. But until we change the skeleton, the bare bones of what the law actually says, then we're not going to be as successful changing the society.
David writes to the program and says, regarding city council, he says, Mitch Gruber, an up-and-coming new city council candidate, was raised by lesbian parents and is an avid supporter of our community and rights. That's from David. And that's right. And Mitch Gruber likely to be on city council. He was one of the five Democrats to win in the Democratic primary last month. And history says that means he's going to win on election day and be a member of council. So David is saying there's a wonderful ally. There's someone mm-hmm. who will be a real ally. It's one thing to have allyship, and I think that that's important. Let me ask both of our guests, do you see more members of the LGBTQ community willing to run for office? And is that a discussion that's happening more often? And is that representation important? I think it was former Representative Barney Frank who sort of famously said he now thinks it's easier to be out as gay in Congress than out as an atheist, which is interesting, which is, again, a strange sign of progress, I guess.
And in no disrespect to Matt or Mitch, but in my circle, it's much harder to be out as a politician than...
That's funny. but how do you feel, Bobby? I mean, especially going back, you were the first VP of the Gay Alliance in the Genesee Valley in 1973. That's 44 years. How much change have you seen when it comes to... You're smiling now. We're dating you a little bit here. How much change have you seen when it comes to people who are gay, people who are in the LGBTQ community, running for office, winning office, and how important is that to you?
It's very important. I see that there's little objection to what it's going to happen to the rest of their lives if they come out as gay and come out as wanting to hold office. It used to be that even the gay people who were running for office weren't willing to talk about it, even if they were out amongst their friends. They just didn't want it to be part of the debate for that office. Hmm. And that's happening less and less now. I think Tim Maines was integral in that growth. He had to say a couple times, it doesn't make any difference. What I'm talking about is functioning and making sure that the city of Rochester functions well. And who I am doesn't make that much of a difference. And he phrased it much better than that. But that whole concept is helping people who are gay consider running for office. But I think it's very important that we do have people in the race that have a chance of winning. As much as, and I'll, another parallel, is much as the women's movement needed to have women running for office, it became an issue. I mean, when somebody comes up and says, well, what happens if she's having that time of month while she's got her thumb on the button?
Which actual modern commentators still say things like mm-hmm. that, by the
yes,
way.
Yes, they do.
I know it sounds flippant what Bob just said, but I can find audio really quickly of people saying stuff mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm.
And that is still an important part of the women's movement. The women's movement is not as visible, as separate from other movements as it used to be, but it's still there. It still has its work to do, and it's still a long way to go before they get what they need. And the parallels are there. But it's important that it be part of the landscape, that people learn that a gay man or a lesbian can run for office and have it not be the big part of the campaign.
And I would agree. I think that having folks who are any identity within the community mm-hmm. Serving their city, serving their county, serving their state, even their country, when it comes to civil service in that sense, it not only allows that voice to be at the table, because it's one thing to say, well, we'll bring your voice to the table, you know, my constituents, they just tell me what they need and I'll do it. It's another thing to actually have those voices at the table. I mean, when we're talking around race, when we're talking around religion, ethnicity, ability, orientation, gender identity, things like that. But I think it also, it provides a possibility model to young people, you know, that thing can happen, that I can grow up and be this person who is positive and makes a difference in my community.
Well, it's the Out Alliance, outalliance.org, mm-hmm. And you'll find a lot more at the website there and a lot more to learn. The efforts continue. And Bob Crystal, I just so much appreciate hearing your story and the work that you've done over 44, 45 years here in our community. Thank you for your service, and it's great talking to you.
Thank you.
And always great. Rowan, yeah, real quick, go ahead.
Yes, the quickest plug, tonight at our LGBTQ Resource Center on 100 College Ave, we will be having a large block party. Rain or shine, the weather will not dampen our party. We'll have drag shows, food, some booze tastings, and just a lot of fun. So 5:30 to 7:30, 100 College Ave.
5:30 tonight. 5:30 yes, tonight. 100 College Avenue, indeed. Rochester, at the Resource Center,
yes.
For the Out Alliance. Thank you, Rowan. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Have a great day, everyone. We'll talk to you tomorrow.